kwakuwamkwamnyako nauvuku na undukufu hata milele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and thank you once again for tuning in to Radio Harambe, the companion podcast to our website, jamboeveryone.com. I am Dave McBride, broadcasting from the Radio Harambe studios, and joining me from somewhere in the world, it's Safari Mike. Mike, how are you today?
Jambo, Dave. I am in Barilio Carrillo National Park.
Barilio Carrillo?
Right. It could be Barilio Carrillo
Spell
National
it.
Park. B-A-R-U-L-I-L.
R-U-L-I-L.
B-R-A-U-L-I-O.
I
Come on, give it a shot.
B-R-A-U. I got to write it down and see what it looks like.
God.
Is it... It's probably Spanish.
This is why we get one-star reviews, Dave.
God, this what? Is not why we get one-star reviews, Mike. We get one-star reviews because of me. It's Spanish?
Yes.
So, but I'm not going to say it's... If it's you got to be in a jungle somewhere. So,
okay.
Spanish jungle, I'm going to go with Venezuela, maybe? Panama.
Dave, that's close. Costa
really?
Rica.
Very Costa close.
Rica. We're studying the King Vulture. Have you ever seen the King Vulture, Dave?
No.
They are a beautiful vulture, but their heads, unlike many of them that are either black or just plain red, they have vibrant colors on their head and a little knob of yellowish kind of flesh on the top of their bill. And, of course, I like all vultures. They eat carrion. But they have the largest brain case of any New World vulture, so we're studying how smart they really are.
A colorful vulture.
Yes, very colorful.
How cool. Well, it's Costa Rica for you, man. On this show, we are going to discuss the news from Disney's Animal Kingdom, plus Safari Mike will have the news from the rest of the Walt Disney World. And in our feature segment, we're actually going to take one pretty important story from the local news and spend a little bit more time on it. And this specifically is the news of an article in Variety magazine with a conversation with Bob Iger, Disney CEO, where he talks in depth about the ride system and the rides coming to, well, I wouldn't say in depth, but he talks a little bit about Avatar, mm-hmm. and we're going to save that for the end. But let's begin first, Mike, with some news that I think you've been kind of scooping for a bit here, and that is Tusker House is getting a character dinner, correct?
Yeah, Dave, we've been talking about this probably for a couple of months now, that this was sort of, I've been hearing that this was going to eventually happen. I'm actually a little bit surprised that it's happening this quickly. Starting on March 8, 2015, Tusker House will be introducing Donald's character Safari Dinner or something along those lines. Finally, all three meals, as we all know, for a long time, Tusker House has had character breakfast and character lunch.
Right.
And now they're doing a character dinner. But I'm just a little surprised it's this quick.
Yeah, I noticed you actually posted something like that on Twitter, that you were surprised that it didn't wait until the Rivers of Light, correct?
Or at least closer. I mean, from what everything we're hearing, Rivers of Light is coming about a year after that. March 2016 is the current rumored beginning of Rivers of Light.
Right.
And, you know, the character dinner, I think even, you know, we've been hearing from, you know, little birdies that there was going to be a Tusker House character dinner. But even logically, once this park is open till 8, 9 o'clock at night, it would just make sense that since dinner would become more of a feature at Tusker House, they would make it a character meal. But I don't know if this is signaling the fact that coming this spring as opposed to next spring, you're going to have later hours to really make it worth a while to have a character dinner. certainly March 8th is right before the rush of the Easter and season and right. you know, spring breaks and all right. that kind of stuff. So, you know, the parks are a little bit more crowded in late March and April.
Right.
And, you know, hours would be a little bit later than that. But I you know, typically they didn't go really past 6 o'clock even then.
Sure. Mike, you make a great point. One I didn't even think of, which is, I mean, for just to kind of pull it all together here, is that for a lot of the down season, and we're talking about the fall, we're talking about, you know, almost any time where you can, where you think it's not going to be crowded at Walt Disney World, they scale the Animal Kingdom hours back to 5 o'clock, sometimes 6 o'clock, and dinner isn't usually offered on a lot of these restaurants, including the Yak and Yeti, where they won't take right. a reservation after like 4:30.
Right.
To announce this and to put some time and effort into it, and then not offer it every night. I mean, does this mean that even in the slow times, that the Animal Kingdom's gonna be open till 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock at least, so they can get in something?
Yeah, I mean, even the real slow times, even Hollywood Studios will close at like 7 o'clock sometimes. Or 8 o'clock, you know, somewhere in there. Maybe that will be the new norm for Animal Kingdom.
But that would be great, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Even like in the first week of May or, you know, October or whatever, when it's typically 6 o'clock, maybe the new norm will be 7, which is every hour helps, I think.
And we have, I believe WDW Magic is the place that I saw this on. And we have a beginning on March, like March 8th, correct, is what we said?
That's what I've been hearing, yeah.
Okay, so you can start making reservations, I think, tomorrow for it.
What I think you could start making reservations, what I read was December 18th. I'm not sure if that is true or not.
Okay, so a week, in a
yeah,
week.
Yeah, but soon, anyway, soon. So I already talked to somebody on Twitter who was planning on, I guess they're going, you know, in March or so, switching a lunch to like the last dinner reservation so they can walk out at night, you know,
great
with
idea.
The park empty and all that kind of stuff. So. You know, for people who are planning on going in March, April, you know, even early May and whatnot, you know, look into it. It's a great way to sort of hang out until the last moment that you can and just walk out and check out the park at night. So,
yeah, that's a great idea. So be on the lookout for that. I mean, Tusker House does a great job with holding the character meals. So, and this makes a lot of sense and, you know, offers a destination place for you know, for people doing the character meals. So that's should, you know, we keep getting further and further towards this, you know, 12-hour day experience at the Animal Kingdom, and I can't wait for that to be a reality. But you know, in order to end your day, you have to begin your day. And this week we had a torrent of coffee news to begin our days at the Animal Kingdom. Last week, Disney filed notice of commencement, which is basically just a permit that they file with the county to begin construction on something they call the Creature Comfort Kiosk Installation. It seems like it's going to be a permanent kiosk-type structure going next to the Creature Comforts, or next to it, I guess. And Mike, your information tells us it's Starbucks, correct?
I'm pretty sure Starbucks is taking over at least part of Creature Comforts, and this kiosk would be a part of that.
So we'd have a bigger store, and then this would just be sort of like a walk-up area, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's going on is, from what I understand, like, Creature Comforts and what you hear is it's going to be part FastPass Plus kiosk, part Starbucks, and, you know, the kiosk would be, part of that. Or perhaps the kiosk would even be the FastPass Plus section, but be that as it may. And that's in part why they're expanding out some of the other shops on the other part, like Disney Outfitters and the Island Mercantile.
Right.
Because, you know, they're losing retail space, and you know how Disney's loath to lose retail space.
Yeah.
They're losing it here to build the Starbucks and then, you know, expanding out some stores elsewhere.
Well, nothing says enter in the jungle quite like a cup of a tall latte, whatever, a grande something or other.
Yeah, a caramel brulee.
There you go.
Latte is a holiday drink that I've probably had 10 of over the last couple of weeks. They're quite good.
That does
sound
enticing.
I'm exaggerating a little bit with 10, but it's very good.
That does sound enticing. You're much more hip than I. You travel in the world. Starbucks is really all you have, correct?
That's true.
In more Animal Kingdom Coffee news, and yes, there is more than one story on Animal Kingdom Coffee. According to OrlandoParkNews.com, the Isle of Java kiosk closed after park hours on December 1st. Last Monday, and it looks like this is the beginning of a move to the Flame Tree barbecue area. Mike, I guess this is probably the Safari Cantina project we discussed last time.
Told you.
Yeah. It's disappointing, right?
From what I had heard, they were building a Joffrey's kiosk was going to go over there. So basically now, you know, once it's all said and done, you walk into Disney's Animal Kingdom in the morning. You go left, you want a cup of coffee, there's going to be a Starbucks right there. You go right, you want a cup of coffee, and the Joffrey's kiosk is going to be right there. So
there'll be plenty of coffee.
Well, I mean, you know, at 9 o'clock in the morning, people drink coffee. I mean, I don't know what
to say. I agree. But when you've bought one of those cups that you paid $18 for, you try to get your coffee before you get in. So let's move on, away from coffee, shall we? The crazy holiday crowds are about to descend upon Disney World, and it means additions to the character meet and greets throughout the parks and at Disney's Animal Kingdom as well. And it looks like Tarzan will be coming back to the Animal Kingdom to meet crowds during the busy season. WDWMagic.com has the information on there. Mike, nothing says Christmas like Tarzan. How about you?
I suppose so. I guess he's not wearing a kind of like a Christmas hat or anything like that, is he?
I don't think that information has been compiled just yet, has been released to the public.
Well, when there's a lot of people in the parks, you got to add things for them to do, usually it's in the form of entertainment. And I suppose this is some sort of form of entertainment, whether that's, you know, different bands or whatever playing. So,
or Tarzan.
Or Tarzan. I guess we'll have Tarzan. No Jane, though, I guess, huh?
No. Disappointing. So look for that if you're in the park. Finally, this is kind of a little bit outside of the park. Well, not finally. It's tradition these days for Disney Nature to release the new documentary film on Earth Day. And this Earth Day coming up is April 17th. And the movie is called Monkey Kingdom. A brand new trailer was released by the company late last week. Other than the fact that you can't find these particular monkeys, I don't believe, at the Animal Kingdom...
You cannot.
It is hard not to really see the connection here between the park and the film, even when you just see this little snippet. The ruins and the scenery, I mean, it looks like an Andapur.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw it, you instantly think, any Animal Kingdom fan would instantly think of the Maharaja Jungle Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps, you know, where the gibbons are.
Yep.
Right outside of that.
That's what came to my mind, was the gibbon area.
Yeah, these are, I believe, they're Rhesus macaques, Rhesus monkeys, which are quite common in some of the temples in India. So I guess this is sort of telling their story.
They're like pigeons there. They're everywhere.
I'm not sure if they're quite like pigeons, but there are some there are some temples where they're in sort of almost, you know, just sort of take over, really.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we know how... Everybody knows how we feel about these things. Nature documentaries are as part of the Walt Disney legacy as anything. And, you know, I certainly applaud Disney Nature for what they do. You know, some of their releases are better than others. I think they all, you know, some of them kind of blend into each other a little bit. They use sort of similar storylines and stuff. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I wish they would be less schmaltzy and a little more informational. I know what they're going for, and I certainly would never suggest that they shouldn't continue to do it the way they are, because they must be having success.
I guess so. I mean, they do them every year, and it, you know, it's sort of, I guess they really can't tell the story so true to life to really entice little kids, which is, I guess, the target they're going for.
Yeah.
And if they do it in sort of an anthropomorphized way, to have kids relate more to animals. In the end, that's a good thing.
It is a very good thing.
Right. They start caring about the animals. And I mean, I saw the movie Chimpanzee. I was not all that impressed with it. Again, there was a lot of story that really, I mean, I don't know how true it was.
Right. And that's the criticism of it, right? I mean, that's what you get. It feels a little forced.
Yeah, but well put together in terms of cinematography. Beautiful.
Gorgeously shot.
Right. And, you know, you get kids to care about chimpanzees. Maybe as, you know, as they grow up, they like them and, you know, try to protect them. So it's a good thing.
Yeah. I, again, we applaud it. And finally, with the holiday season approaching, it's time for Shaman's Plug. Have you gone over to our store page yet at JomboEveryone.com? You're going to find lots of stuff there. That gorgeous handmade bracelets make a perfect gift for your Animal Kingdom lover. Go to our Zazzle page. Have you gotten your Not Half Day Park t-shirt yet for yourself or your Animal Kingdom lover in your family? So remember,
every family has one.
100% of the profits go towards our conservation partners. Go to JomboEveryone.com. You click the store to see all that stuff, and you can click conservation to see about our partners. And that's it for the local news.
No, it's not.
Uh-oh.
I heard something within the last half hour. Well, I guess it's a little more than that now.
Uh-oh.
A little birdie told me, Dave. Remember we were talking about the hyenas? We've talked about them over the last couple of shows.
Yes.
But we kind of thought about where they might be going and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Well, a little birdie told me that the rumor is that they are going to be part of the nighttime version of Kilimanjaro Safari. Interesting, right?
Very cool. Very, very cool.
I just learned that within the last hour. I mean, learned that it was, you know, the hot rumor going around.
That's part of the nighttime safari. So it'll be inside.
I can't tell you anything more than that. But that's what I'm hearing, that when you take the nighttime version, and it's interesting that if you do take the nighttime version, and clearly they're advertised or, you know, they're sort of intimating that the nighttime version will be a different experience than the daytime version. And if they have, for example, hyenas or maybe some even other different animals on the nighttime version of the ride, that would certainly make it a very different experience. Not just that it's in dark, but you see different animals. I mean, that would be kind of cool to be able to see hyenas on the savannah at night.
Very cool. They're not nocturnal by nature, though, correct?
No, they're nocturnal. Absolutely, they are.
Oh, I thought. I mean, you see plenty of pictures of them during the day.
Well, they're both. They're both. Yeah,
okay.
But I mean, they are. They certainly are active at night.
Cool. You heard it here first.
In fact, one of the myths about hyenas were, you know, for many, many years, centuries even, were that they were scavengers, and because people who would, you know, people who are out studying them would see lions eating a kill and all these hyenas sort of, you know, scounging around the outskirts of the kill. Turns out more cases than not, it's the hyenas that killed the zebra or whatever in the middle of the night. The lions came in and knocked him away from the kill, and it's the hyenas kind of like all ticked off that they got their kill stolen, and people just misinterpreted the data that they had in front of them. So hyenas are nighttime animals.
Very cool. Very, very cool. We've talked about them quite a bit in past episodes. You go back and listen to some of those things. We're excited for that. And I think that, you know, this I can't wait to learn more about this nighttime safari thing. It's going to be a great addition. I really am excited for that one. So thank you very much for that. My eyes a scoop there. Let's hope that comes out right.
Yeah, hopefully. So far, I'm pretty good on these.
Yeah, so far, your record's pretty, you're batting pretty well. That'll do it for the local news. In a moment, we're going to take a break here, and in a moment, we're going to come back and turn it over to Safari Mike for the world news. Coming back in just a second. Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And she is as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book, or even every quote you request, means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jumbo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to JomboEveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife?
Bobo, Bobo,
Welcome back to Radio Harambe. As always, it is time for the world news, the segment that gets me in a lot of trouble. And with that is Safari Mike. Mike, how are you?
Dave, I'm well. We will go to old fantasy land, not the fantasy land that currently has frozen people in it, and the United Kingdom. But first, Dave, let's talk about Meg Crofton.
Trying to bait me already, aren't you? Go ahead.
Meg Crofton is the president of operations in the United States and France. And many Disney fans, you know the name. She is retiring come June 2015.
Well, we know her because her previous post was basically the head of Walt Disney World.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. And she got promoted to a position that essentially they made up for her to be promoted to, and that's the president of operations in the United States and France. So that sort of oversees all the United... Oh, obviously, all the United States parks as well as the Disneyland Paris parks.
Right. Well... Good for her. I mean, I don't know how long she's been at the company, but man,
35 years.
How many?
35 years.
Yeah, I was going to say I don't remember the last time I didn't hear her name. I mean, she's been in the upper management for quite some time.
Yeah, she was in human resources for the longest time, and you know, vice president of it for a while, I believe, before she became a vice president of Disney World, essentially.
You know, there's no way ever to judge. You always pin the successes of the on things like the CEO, you know, but it's people like this that really get the nuts and bolts stuff done, and you never really know. I mean, it's hard to say, but you know, good luck to her.
Dave, I'm going to move over to Epcot now and World Showcase, where the Paul McKenna Band has begun playing in the United Kingdom Pavilion.
Right
in the middle of the square there, not back by where British Invasion was in that back park. Have you had a chance to text them on YouTube?
I have. They are right where the old improv troupe was.
Correct. And they're sort of the replacement for that. I like them.
Yeah. I heard only... Oh, man. I mean, I only heard a couple of songs, really. You know, I saw some like you were saying, some YouTube clips and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like it too. I'm impressed with it. That they seem to be a good fit there. I thought the where they have them, which is basically just standing in front of a building, you know, with no kind of barrier, no stage or anything, no sound system either.
Right.
It's very organic. Anybody who's been in a pub in Ireland will know that a lot of times you just have musicians kind of sitting around and playing. There's not a big production. I'm surprised that they're doing that. I really am. I'm surprised that is where they went with this and not a stage production. But let's see. Maybe that changes. Who knows? Because it's
right.
But yeah, they're very talented. They're very good. I've actually, you know, looked them up and they're accomplished. They've been playing for a while together and it's great to see. So yeah, all the best. I mean, I've been very critical of our choices at Epcot Entertainment. I won't be critical of this one. This is a good band, and this is a good addition.
I agree. I like it. I like them a lot.
Yeah, check them out. You can just you know, Google search Paul McKenna Band and Disney, and you'll see these clips come up. They're talented. Very, very good. And my kind of stuff too. Mike will tell you. I'm a lover of that kind of music. So it's great. I can't wait to see them.
Now, Dave, let's play a favorite game of yours.
Oh, boy.
Dave, guess that price. First, we actually have a couple of versions of this. The first one, Dave, is the Taste of Hollywood Winter Fantasmic Package.
Wow. How'd they fit that on a,
with
a brochure?
There's actually two current or two different prices. One that's going – this only goes until December 31st. The price is a little bit cheaper up until Christmas Eve, and then it's a little bit more expensive for the week of, you know, between Christmas and New Year's Eve. Anyway, what you do is essentially you get a reserved viewing ticket for Fantasmic at a preferred location. And I'm sure that means sort of out of the way, like just like the Fantasmic dining package. Plus you pre-purchase basically a picnic lunch. You know, the choices include a vegetable sandwich, basically a piece of fried chicken and mashed potatoes, a roast beef sandwich, a California roll, and there's actually a couple of kids' meals. One is basically a turkey and cheese wrap, and the other one sort of has yogurt and apple wedges and carrot sticks and such. you pick them up at Mim and Bill's. And for those of you who don't know, that's right near like where the old American Idol experience is. And you can pick up this picnic lunch anytime between 11 a.m. and 8 p.m. So you can actually have it for lunch and then hours upon hours later go to Fantasmic. Dave, what do you think the cost of this is?
Per person, I would assume.
Correct. And I will tell you, for it, you can use one quick service meal.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Okay, well then let's drop it back a bit. I will say $22.95.
Before Christmas Eve, it's $16.99.
Wow.
And after Christmas, it's $18.10.
To get a lunch and get a spot at Fantasmic, that's a deal.
It's not bad. It's really actually not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly the lunches is by no means gourmet.
No, but it's a quick service.
Right, so basically...
In the Hollywood studios, Mike,
Right, well, that's the other thing I was going to bring up. I mean, the choices there are slim pickings anyway. So you can get, like, a piece of fried chicken and some mashed potatoes. That would probably cost you $8.99 or $9.99 in a quick service joint. So you're basically adding another $7-$8 just to get, like, a sure seat at Fantasmic. That's not bad.
Yeah, and that time of year, if you want to see Fantasmic... That's worth it. That's worth a few bucks. Now, you know,
and I can make it even better for you, Dave.
Go ahead.
The kids' meals that I was telling you about.
Yeah,
$5.45.
Holy schmoly! That's fantastic.
It's not really not that bad.
No, that's good. That's a value right there. I'm impressed. That's a good price and good and like I said, at a busy time of year, Fantasmic can be difficult to get into.
They usually have two viewings, by the way, busy nights. But go ahead.
They usually do, but sometimes it's still hard. Mm-hmm. Certainly, if you want to get in on the first one, and if if you're going to eat anyway, there you go. It's not. I like it. Cool.
You ready to play another round of guess, Dave? Guess how much this costs?
Yep.
All right. Maybe this comes as a surprise to you, Dave, but Star Wars Weekends is coming back next year. That was announced.
Really?
Starting in May. And, much of the same stuff is coming back, including the two character meals. There is the Star Wars Dine-In Galactic Breakfast. And for some reason, they put an exclamation point at the end of breakfast as part of the title, but that be that as it may. That's the breakfast at the Sci-Fi Dine-In Theater. And here, where on the movie screen, they'll play classic scenes from Star Wars.
Oh, cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And you can also meet characters. They kind of mix it up, but it could be Darth Vader, Stormtroopers, Greedo, Boba Fett.
Nice.
Any of those characters. I believe you order a la carte off a menu. So you can order one of several items. I don't have the menu that has not been released. Dave, guess how much that breakfast costs?
It's a la carte?
Right, so basically, I believe you get a menu and you could pick, maybe like the waffle entree or, whatever. It's not a buffet, I could tell you that. It's a la carte, but it's a fixed price.
Fixed price. And you get meet and greets.
Mm-hmm. At the Sci-Fi Dining.
And it's breakfast.
It is breakfast.
Well, I'll tell you this. If it were a dinner or if it were a buffet dinner, I would say, as much as $50 a person. But since it's breakfast, maybe you don't know this, but what is like Chef Mickey's or something like that cost?
Well, I could look it up, but I don't know it off the top of my head.
Okay. Then let me say it is, I would say 39. I'm just going to sound ignorant here because I don't know what the prices are for the other buffets. I think that
I can tell you what the prices of the buffets are.
The other ones available. But I would think.
You mean like Chef Mickey's, right?
Yeah, but I would think they'd probably be around the 40 range. So I would say, 36 to 40. So I'm going to say 39, 42.
$49.99 for adults, $31.99 for children aged 3 to 9.
It's a little high.
It's a little high, but these things sell out. They sold out all last year.
You know what, Mike? It's It's a little high. Let me revise that. It's a little high, but like you said, there's only a couple of times you get to do this. So, you know, it's not something that's there all the time. There's going to be a premium for that.
And right.
If it were a dinner, a buffet dinner, or even just a buffet, if it were like a... See, the problem is it's a la carte, and that's why I'm saying it's not a good price. Because
no, it's definitely not a good price.
Yeah, it's too high. But if it were a buffet, I would say $40, you know, because that's what they charge. They charge, you know...
Go ahead. Yeah, they charge a lot, and you're meeting stormtroopers and Darth Vader,
which is incredibly cool.
Now, just for, and I apologize for kind of stepping on you there. The one of the things I wanted to say is it's not just on Star Wars weekends, though.
Oh,
it goes only from the time of Star Wars weekend. So it starts on May 4th and it ends on June 14th, like Star Wars weekends.
But it's during the week,
right? So if you showed up on a Wednesday, you can go there too. For, you know, it's not just on the weekends,
but it still only happens for that month or so.
Correct.
Listen, I love Star Wars weekend. We've said many, many times before, I don't do character meet and greets. I would probably take my picture with Darth Vader. One of the most entertaining character meet and greets I ever saw were the Stormtroopers.
Right.
They're terrifically funny. The parade at Star Wars weekends is just fantastic.
Right.
I mean, for those of you who don't know, there's a group of Stormtrooper reenactors. You know, imagine like Civil War reenactors. There's a group of Stormtrooper reenactors out there. They're called, I think, the 501st Legion or something like that, right?
You're correct. Correct.
And they are terrific. And they all have their own costumes, and they come and they parade down. I mean, it is really cool. And so I'm a big fan of Star Wars weekend. If this were a buffet... Or if it were, like I said, if it were dinner or something, like I was getting a good, good meal out of it, I probably would even consider doing this. But I don't know if I would do it $50 for an a la carte breakfast. That just doesn't seem, you know, a couple of Mickey waffles and a bowl of pineapples just is not, you know.
Well, Dave, at the same time, over at the Hollywood and Vine, for dinner starting at 4 o'clock, you can do Jedi Mickey's Star Wars Dine at Hollywood, where... You'll meet Jedi Mickey, as well as Minnie, Donald, Goofy, Chippendale, I think, too, all dressed as various Star Wars characters. I think Goofy might be Han Solo, maybe. I don't even remember. This is a buffet, just like the Hollywood and Vine.
Okay.
Not very good food. I'm not a big fan of Hollywood and Vine, but
no. It
is a buffet there. Guess how much that costs?
Okay, this is a difficult one for me because, and I'll tell you why. Excuse me, because I personally find the idea of meeting the Star Wars characters, Greedo, Boba Fett, I personally find that much cooler than Mickey dressed up as a Jedi. But
agreed.
I know that that's not always the case, that the Disney fans would really like this, and these are probably, you know, there's not very many opportunities to see, you know, Darth Vader Goofy. So I know there's going to be a crush for that. So what did we say? It was this is a
buffet dinner.
Buffet?
Mm-hmm.
The last one was $50.
Mm-hmm.
This has to be more.
Okay.
So I'm going to say $60.
$57.99.
Now that's outrageously priced.
Children are $34.
I don't like that. That's high. That's very high.
What, 57?
$58 for dinner, yeah. Mike?
Well, you know, it's interesting in that clearly they know that people would rather meet Darth Vader and the Stormtroopers because an a la carte breakfast is only $8 cheaper than a full-out buffet dinner.
Yeah, you're right about that. That's a good point.
So... I mean, they're taking into account that people would rather meet, you know, Stormtroopers and Greedo than Jedi Mickey and Han Solo Goofy. Again, by the way, the same deal. You could do this on a Tuesday or Wednesday night or whatever, just as long as it's in that 6-week period where they do Star Wars weekends.
They're cool. They're both cool sounding events. I just think that it's a bit pricey. But, you know, you're coming down for Star Wars weekend if you want to get involved in all the different things. You know, if you're there for Star Wars weekend, doing the character meet and greets can be difficult. I mean, it can be crowded there. It's hard to stand online for some of these things. I mean, this is a chance to do those meet and greets at one of these events without having to do the lines and stuff, and still you get a meal. Yeah, you're right, though. I mean, I am surprised at the how close in price they are.
To be honest, I think I would totally spend the $50 and do the breakfast.
You know what? I probably would too.
It's just kind of cool to be sitting in those cars and watching Star Wars clips,
and then
stormtroopers come around the car and take pictures. I mean, I know it's expensive for a couple of Mickey waffles and some sausage and coffee, but it is kind of cool.
It is. It sounds like a great event, and the other one just sounds like a regular character meet and greet. This one, that sounds like really kind of a special thing. Sounds like something really cool. If it were a buffet, like I said already a couple times, if it were a buffet, it's sold, I'd do it. But I don't know if I'd spend $50 for an a la carte breakfast.
Because
what you're doing, Mike, is you're spending $30, $35 for character meet and greets. Is it really worth it?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I'll stand on the line, right?
I mean, you got to think, like, I have a family of four.
Yep.
Both of my children, who are 10 and 12, would be past the child meals.
So it's $200 breakfast.
It costed me $200 to that breakfast.
Yep.
$200. That's a lot of money for
That's what I mean.
Waffles and sausage. It is. It's probably something you only do once, but
yeah, but if what you want is the characters, at that price, I'd probably wait on the lines. That would probably push me into doing what I don't want to do and wait on those lines, but because it's just not, the value just isn't there.
Yeah. I have one more story if you're ready for it.
Yeah.
Probably the one attraction in all of Disney World that really needed a new queue has finally got one. The Peter Pan's Flight, which of course can back up to over an hour. The old queue was basically switchbacks outside. It could be like 150 degrees underneath that awning there and people piling on each other. Well, now you actually queue up and walk through the homes of of Wendy and everybody. You go through their rooms and stuff like that. It's not interactive per se. You're just sort of seeing things. Although my understanding is they may be working on some interactive elements as you're going through the children's bedrooms and the halls of the house. But this was much needed. I mean, now it's air conditioned and there's something to look at.
Everything.
I don't know if I would wait 45 minutes for Peter Pan, but at least now you're in air conditioning and like looking at some fun stuff. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at any of the YouTube videos.
I have not.
Right. So basically you're walking through some halls with some portraits and stuff like that. And you look at a window and there's Big Ben and all that kind of stuff. And then you go through the room itself and you're just sort of, little touches about, from the old movie Peter Pan about their, their bedroom and all that kind of stuff. It's neat. I mean, it's nothing fantastic. It does not have any of the elements like the Winnie the Pooh one does, where you have that honey wall where all those little kids, after picking their nose, are wiping their hands all over this all over this board. So it's a little bit more sanitary, this particular queue.
Lovely.
I actually kind of like it. I'm glad they did it. I really needed it.
I mean, that's what I would say. I haven't seen it yet, so I can't comment too much on it, but it can only be better. I mean, right, the Peter Pan queue is one of the queues that everybody complains about for years and for decades.
I can't think of a queue other than the original Soarin' queue that was worse.
At least that was
indoors.
When Dumbo had a queue.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, that wasn't anything to write home about. And
before they
started putting in a lot of fans and things into the Big Thunder Mountain queue, that wasn't great either.
That's pretty close too. Yeah.
Splash Mountain only has a few of it that's acceptable. A lot of it's sitting outside, but
But you go in and out of inside, so it's a little.
Yeah, it's a little better.
I would not put Splash Mountain in that category. But you're right about Big Thunder and Dumbo.
Yeah. Those were tough to do.
And both of them could get lines that were, especially the old Dumbo, where it was just one of them. You can have like 45 minute waits easy, even in
a good day.
Even in the not extremely busy times.
Yeah,
So, but this is great. It's a great cue. And we'll see what they do next. And we'll see if they add interactive elements. Like I said, there's none there yet, but it wouldn't, you know, but what I'm hearing is that at some point in time, they'll have them up and running. So we'll see.
Air conditioning is, you had me at air conditioning.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as soon as you, you could, I mean, just, you know, walking through something that you can look at in air conditioning. Yep. Is makes a world of difference on that queue.
Totally. So that's it?
That is it.
I'm Explorer Mickey, and like most kids, I love zebras, and some of the coolest are the Grevy Zebra. But if things don't change soon, there won't be any left in the wild. The Grevy Zebra Trust is doing everything they can to help keep them from extinction. But there are only a couple of thousand left, so we have to work fast. Go to their website, GrevyZebraTrust.org, and donate anything you can. Even a small donation will help keep the Grevy Zebra alive for us kids and the future generations to enjoy.
Welcome back to Radio Harambe, and this week we actually doing something we don't normally do, which is we take what is essentially a news story, a local news story, and Mike and I both kind of decided this needed a little bit more than just a, you know, a couple of sentences to discuss it, because what we had just today, and today being the day we're recording, which is Thursday, December, actually I think it came out last night, December 10th.
Yeah, it did.
We got an article, the word from on high came down as the leader has spoken, and Disney CEO Bob Iger, he actually had an interview with the guy's name is Mark Grazer, and Grazer writes, it's not just an interview piece, it's a, he's adds some of his own things in there, but then there's a lot to talk about, and we'll touch on some of the other things later as well, but the thing that kind of sticks out to everybody is what he had to say about Avatar. Now, this isn't Bob Iger talking. This is actually the author kind of interpreting what Bob Iger said. And he says this: the vessels that guests will ride upon will essentially be the Banshees themselves. Now, I'm going to plug in here and describe what a Banshee is for those of you who don't know and haven't seen the film. The Banshee are these big, giant, flying dragon-looking things. They look like a cross between a dragon and a pterodactyl. Would you call that correct, Mike?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, they're very dragon-like.
Yeah. Okay. So, guests will essentially be on the Banshees themselves with bodies that move to mimic a breathing beast. The flying sequences will be brought to life through large video screens, similar to Soarin', with vehicles moving with the 3D action inside a massive theater. Now, he's talking about this because, apparently, Mr. Iger rode the vehicle or took a test ride on the vehicle, correct?
That's what it says.
So, and apparently he had to scale like some scaffolding to get up there, which I'm sure had his insurance broker really excited.
Yeah. I'm curious as to how much scaling he actually did. Some Shamil probably had to carry him up there, but that's neither here nor there.
So here's what sticks out to me, Mike. The first, when I read this, now, we all know I'm the Avatar apologist. Mike is the Avatar critic. But the first thing that came to my mind, the first word that popped into my head was groundbreaking. That this was a ride vehicle I had never heard of before. I've never seen Disney try to bring the vehicle itself to life. Am I making sense?
Right. It sounds like almost that each vehicle, so to speak, that you're on is almost its own audio animatronic.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And it is, I mean, a fascinating concept. And one that I think really, I mean, this, let's use another cliche. This sounds like a possibility of a game changer here. You know, of changing the minds of the critics of Avatar, because this may just be that good a ride.
Oh, could be. I mean, we've talked about in the past about how, you know, something like Splash Mountain, nobody knows what the the movie that the ride is based on, but it's just a fun ride, so people love it. Obviously, if it's going to be a fun ride, people are going to enjoy it. And certainly if it's going to be a groundbreaking, game-changing, other cliche, you know, ride, something that's never been done before, e-ticket up the yin-yang,
right,
people are going to flock to it, even if it is stupid Avatar. That's true.
So what are your initial thoughts upon reading this today?
I had quite a few, actually. Again, you hear the... First of all, obviously, the ride vehicles themselves, what we already talked about, was interesting because you are now riding something that will move and actually, you know, what they even say, mimic the you know, what a Banshee is. I'm curious as to how that's going to work. I mean, I guess the idea will be you'll be strapped to the, you know, maybe a group of six people and like some sort of, you know, whatever, strapped to the top of a Banshee as it flies around.
Well, in the film, they rode them like you would ride a horse.
Right.
Saddled.
I'm assuming you won't be doing that. I'm assuming you'll be sitting in seats with a seatbelt. Maybe you'll be, you know, almost as if the Banshee is carrying on its back a little, you know, rickshaw kind of thing or something. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like you'd be sitting in something. That would be my assumption. I don't think you'd actually be riding. Because if it's like Soarin', you're going to be up in the air. And they're going to want you strapped in better than you would be on a breathing, you know, on a mimicking of a breathing beast kind of thing. Because it's going to, if it's like Soarin', and even this thing, even this particular article references Soarin' as sort of the, you know, almost like, you know, Soarin' on steroids. You're going to be up in the air. You're going to be moving from side to side or whatever. So they're going to want to strap you in. I'm not sure how one person per, you know, Banshee would work. The other thing I'm curious as to how it's going to actually work. I mean, the next sentence talks about first 3D, which I like. Then they talk about a massive theater. Now, if it's a massive theater, how many of these Banshees are going to be in one theater?
Well,
right. I mean, how are they going to pull it off where it doesn't look like, you know, these Banshees are attached to like poles or whatever, and it's obviously not, you know, I'm not sure how they're going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm curious about that because there's going to have to be, you know, dozens of these things in a massive theater. There's going to be people flying above you, people flying below you, in front of you, to the side of you, and all, you know, moving and, you know, each Banshee doing its own thing, I guess. All in front of a 3D screen, like a Soarin' movie.
Right.
That's going to be a hard thing to pull off.
Okay, before we get too far, let me comment on a couple of those things you said.
Yeah, go ahead.
First and foremost is the actual Banshees and themselves. They are huge in the film. I mean, these things are the size of, you know, 40-foot wingspans or something like that. I mean, these are big animals. So,
well, they're the size of like a large horse, really.
Oh no! In the film, well, first of all, the people who are riding them are twice the size of a human.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're riding on its head with this wingspan that goes out probably 15 feet in each direction. So they're big. They're like more like a dinosaur kind of look than anything else.
Okay.
And they ride them without a saddle, and they hold on to like their like antennas or something on the back. They hold on to them, right? So they ride them kind of naturally.
I'm pretty sure you're not going to be doing that.
That's what I was just going to say. That is obviously not what's going to happen here. But for some reason, it's hard to believe that they're not going to try to get close to that as possible because of what he said about the feeling the motion of the breathing. I mean, if you're straddling a horse, you can feel the horse breathe.
Right.
You know, how are you going to do that? Is there going to be seat backs? I mean, it's... how are they going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing that comes to my mind is how they're going to actually replicate these things that they say they're going to, and how you're going to be able to, you know, feel this breathing motion while sitting in a chair. The other thing that comes to my mind is ADA accessibility for something like that.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of people who go to Disney that can't climb on the back of a big animal.
Well, can I ask you, what is the ADA accessibility of Soarin'?
Well, it's just a chair.
Right, you just have to be able to transfer, I guess, right?
Yes, you have to be able to transfer to it.
All right. Well, I mean, if
but even not even disability, there is a group of people in the world who wouldn't be able to step their legs over the top of a big giant creature. Okay,
well, like I
so you can't
no
get
way.
On it like you'd get on a horse.
Right, that's not happening.
So that's the first thing that comes to my mind is how's that going to be? But they're obviously going to try to integrate that as part of the experience, or he wouldn't have said that. The other part you mentioned was the putting them in the room. Now in the movie, there's one person per banshee. We can assume that that's also not going to be the case.
Yeah, it'll be 3, 4, 6, something like that.
Right. So we have to figure out now if they're going to have a handful. And they're going to put people in this room, and there's going to be a bunch of them. How are you boarding them if they're at different levels?
Yeah, I mean, are they going to be attached to some sort of... I don't even know how this would work, and then you would almost, like, layer them like you do in Soarin'. Like,
yeah, hang them?
Yeah, I don't know.
They'd have to be hanging on some kind of track system.
Yeah, but if you do that, then people just look up and see, well... I could see where those things are attached to the ceiling or to the side, or it's gonna be hard to pull off.
It is. No, you're 100% right. It's gonna be hard to pull off. But the idea of riding a dynamic vehicle in 3D in a theater the size of Soarin', I wonder if there's not, you know, if we get the glasses on, Mike, we put a little blinders to the side, if we can't make, you know, do
the
our best.
Glasses themselves?
Yeah, not do our best to sort of keep the guests focused the way we want them to be focused.
Make them almost like goggles?
Yeah, I mean, you can look and see a ride vehicle almost everywhere, right? You can see, you could look behind the curtain, so to speak, in a lot of these kind of things. But with this one, yeah, you're right, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be hard. But my guess is, if we're talking about Soarin', hey, you're supposed to be in a hang glider in Soarin', right? All you got to do is look up and you're not in a hang glider. You can see the people's feet dangling. So, I mean, my guess is it's going to be that kind of thing. Was there anything else that came to your mind?
For this, the entire article or just that one?
Just the Avatar.
Oh, well, no, yeah, there's still more Avatar stuff that I found it interesting that, let me find where it was. I found it interesting that you know we have heard rumors in various spots that Disney is running into a couple of issues with Avatar, one being pulling off the floating mountains. I've heard that that might not be
as easy as it sounded.
That it sounded. This again references it that it will include Pandora's floating mountains. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, but we don't know. That's the thing about this article is we don't know what of this information, especially when he does mention that. We don't know. Is he getting that from the because it includes the old video, right, of James Cameron and Joe Rohde. How much is he pulling from that video? And how much is he pulling from Bob Iger? Now, we know he's pulling the ride stuff because he mentions about how Iger was climbing, like we said before, scaling the scaffoldings to get there. And that's really the point. I mean, this little piece of the flying banshee stuff is really what this article is all about. Mm-hmm. He kind of splits the whole conversation into two articles. There's this one, and then the one that basically is everything else.
Actually, there's three others. There's a whole Star Wars one, too.
Oh, that's true. He did break out the Star Wars into a different one as well. That's great. I'm sorry. I forgot about that.
We should probably talk about the Star Wars real quickly. But first, Avatar. And the other thing he mentions here, and again, this could be just old news, it's going to include a boat ride, which, again, you hear rumors that Disney might be cutting costs and the boat ride would be out. I hope to God that's not true.
Yeah.
And hopefully it is not true. It does reference that it will include a boat-based attraction. I mean, I don't know. Like, for example, if Disney knew there was not going to be a boat-based attraction, would they have said something to Variety, don't include that in the article? I don't know. I don't know if they have any type of review power of the article to for corrections or anything like that. Who knows? But it does mention again the boat ride. So hopefully that's still alive and well. Those are a couple of things that popped into my head as well.
Well, just so that we know exactly what Mike is talking about, the quote in here from the article, and this again is not from Bob Iger's mouth. It says, designed by Walt Disney Imagineering, the land will include Pandora's floating mountains and bioluminescent plants across several acres that will house attractions, including a boat-based attraction and eateries.
Right.
Now, that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, that was the other thing. Eateries, too, huh?
What kind of eateries are we going to have with Big Blue Men?
And bioluminescent plants. Maybe a vegetarian place. I don't know.
Hey, there you go. Are the Na'vi vegetarian?
You know, I don't even know.
I don't remember.
I didn't pay enough attention.
I don't remember if they were hunting or not. I don't remember if that was part of the film. So, yeah. Well, as far as we know now, I mean, listen, right, Mike? Every time one of these things comes around, every time a project like this begins, we always fear the cost cutting. That rumor always happens because it usually does happen, or a lot of times it does happen, especially with big scale projects like this. Mm-hmm. Listen, we're Animal Kingdom fans. We know it better than anybody else.
Yeah, Beastly Kingdom.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, tons of things. I mean, the budgets get slashed. Things start to cost too much as problems arise. You got to pay more for this, that, and the other thing. And it's just the nature of this such a large project. And if they're building two attractions, maybe that's not as big an issue as building, you know, 8 or 10. I don't know. But that's a problem. But from what we're reading here, it's still in the docket, along with the eateries.
Yeah, I'm interested. Oddly, they didn't mention shops, but you know they're going to be in there.
Oh, they're going to have to be. Are you kidding me? Are we missing anything else from Avatar?
I don't think so, Dave. I think that covers everything. You know, it's obviously 2017 is when the movie's coming out. You know, one thing they did say at the very end, they said it's that the Avatar Land is clearly Disney's answer to Universal's Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
Right.
You know, Diagon Alley and all that. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, that's quite a stretch, I think, on the author's part there. Who knows? You know, that's obviously his opinion. I can't imagine that's what Bob Iger said to him.
Yeah, and the next, and also the obviously Avatar Land is coming out in 2017. They do note that the first of the Avatar sequels comes out in December of 2016, only about, you know, 5 to 7 months before the land itself opens. It'll be interesting to see how well that Avatar 2 does right before the land opens up. I'm sure Disney's hoping it does at least relatively well.
Yeah, I mean, you would think. I mean, just for marketing purposes. But I honestly, like I've been saying all along, I think if they pull off what they say they're going to pull off, it's not going to matter. I mean, it will matter because it'll become a punchline. But I think if they put up a great ride, even based on the popularity of the first one, people will go, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if they have floating mountains and plants that look cool when they light up, and a great boat ride and a thrill ride up that's, you know, really an e-ticket plus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, of course, people.
If it keeps people there into the night hours, and then it's accomplished its goal, and I'm sure Disney could care less how the movie does.
Yeah.
So you wanted to mention the word on high included a few other things as well. You and I both being Star Wars fans, the boss had a few things to say about that franchise, did he not?
He did. You know, he again, and we all know that Star Wars is coming to the various parks. He specifically said there will be a much larger Star Wars presence in our parks globally. But we want to do this big, which takes time, and to do it right. And then he puts in that Iger didn't want basically the rides, and the early development of the rides apparently revolved around the first six Star Wars movies, including the three prequels.
Right.
And Iger, according to this article, basically put the kibosh on that and said, you know, let's scale back here. Let's see what J.J. Abrams comes up with The Force Awakens. They now know essentially what The Force Awakens is, obviously, since it's just about, I think, I'm pretty sure filming stopped and they're just in post-production. And they also have a pretty good idea what's coming in the next film, right, as well as some of the standalone films. So now that they know that, they're sort of they Iger said essentially. And this is, I'll quote you actually what Iger said: "We couldn't tell them what was new," meaning the Imagineers. "I slowed it all down, so what we come forward with will have a blend of the past, present, and maybe the future. Now that we have a sense of what's in Star Wars 8 and what some of the standalone films will have in them." Essentially what they're saying here is that anything new coming with Star Wars will predominantly be based on the, you know, the films that are coming, not just necessarily the next trilogy, but also the standalone films that they promised, such as perhaps a standalone Han Solo film, standalone Boba Fett film, et cetera, right, et cetera. So, and also the article says we expect some of the details of this to be revealed next year.
I'm not sure. First of all, there isn't anybody around who is a Star Wars fan who doesn't hope that they base any kind of theme park immersive experience on the... And I hope Mr. Iger knows this. We want it to be based on the original trilogy. Everyone, whether you're 8 years old or 58 years old, that's the one we like. And there may be... These next films may be great. They won't have the legacy that those first films have. So I do hope that changes. And I do hope maybe we're interpreting that a little wrong. Would you agree with that, Mike?
I do. I mean, again, I'll quote this article again. Iger was, you know, they were talking about, didn't want a situation with the new movies coming out where theme park guests would be disappointed with an attraction after seeing The Force Awakens. And he says this: "I didn't want someone to say, I just saw this movie and there's nothing in that movie in this attraction. We waited to see what this film would have in it." Now,
see that? I mean,
that's telling you that the new attractions are going to be based on the new films. Now, having said that, clearly the films that are coming are much more based on the original trilogy, have much more in common with the original trilogy than the prequels do.
Right.
I mean, even from the 35 seconds that you saw in the trailer, and have you seen the teaser trailer, Dave?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody has. Yeah. You've seen the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
You've seen X-Wings. You've seen TIE Fighters. I mean, you know, J.J. Abrams obviously realizes that it was the original films that were the core of this fandom, not the subsequent prequels, not even some of the cartoon series and comic books and novels that came thereafter.
True.
And he is going to, and I trust him to do a pretty good job of it, because he did a phenomenal job with the new Star Trek movies.
Yeah, he did.
He did a good job with that. So I think he senses that, and obviously even actors are the same. I mean, you know, obviously Mark Hamill's in it, and Carrie Fisher, and you know, everybody, Harrison Ford. So even though they're going to be based on the attraction, on the movies that are coming, that doesn't really necessarily mean that they're not going to have anything to do with the originals.
But Mike, doesn't that make him sound so out of touch? I mean, saying that makes... I mean, I'm not going to say that he is, because who knows the context in which he's saying these things. These are quotes taken out of a long conversation. So, but man, does he really think that? I mean, does he really think that Star Wars fanatics, young and old, are going to go into a incredibly themed area, themed after Tatooine, with the, you know, with the cantina and all those things from the original trilogy, and they're going to come out and say, "Oh, gee, I wish the new movie was in this." I mean, does he really think that?
He's quoted
possibly.
As saying it.
He can't possibly.
Well, Dave, I think what Disney thinks. I mean, first of all, The Force Awakens is the first Disney Star Wars movie. So they're a little bit more invested in that than they are in the old, you know, the original trilogy. I mean, I understand that they own it, the original trilogy.
Right.
But this is the first one being made under their watch. Let's put it that way.
I'm not debating for a second the virtue of that for the company to do it.
Right.
But to think that people are going to actually say that, walk in and only have seen the new films, I mean, that shows me... That we're... let me put it this way. It causes an alarm bell in my head, because it makes me think they're trying to justify already not building it for the right reasons and instead building it for marketing purposes of what is their property rather than building the thing that we all want to see.
Yeah, I know.
That's
I
what mean, it really sounds like. Yeah. It's coming darn close to, and I just hope it's wrong because I just hope this is a misinterpretation.
Two things I'll say about that. One is that even if their motive is to really focus on the new movies because those are the Disney movies and, you know, they think that's what people want, not the ones from the past. Like what I just said, you know, what J.J. Abrams is probably creating will still give you the old movies in it. You know what I'm saying? They'll still be, you know, you'll still be seeing the Millennium Falcon in the dark ride. You'll still be, or whatever, you'll still be seeing TIE fighters and,
right,
you know, all that kind of
that's
stuff.
That's true. That's true.
Also, I think Disney thinks, and I think, well, they certainly, I know they hope that this is another Marvel situation where you have the Star Wars trilogy. It's almost like the Avengers movies, these humongous blockbusters. But not only with that, there's going to be a lot of individual movies, you know, all these standalone films that are almost like the Captain Americas and the, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy movies.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they're trying to build a real name brand, a real, you know, real powerhouse in cinema that, you know, the Marvel Studios has become. I mean, it's hard to say if lightning will strike twice like it did with Marvel. I mean, they just hit a home run after home run with those. We're still wait to see. But, I mean, at least it seems, based upon J.J. Abrams and based upon the trailer, at least it seems like it might be in the right direction anyway.
I mean, that makes sense, except that we already have an incredible cultural phenomenon here to begin with. And could the next group be that again? Yes, of course it can, but it won't. I mean, it probably won't, because things like that really only happen once, right? So, like, there was the, you know, there's the original, and then everything that kind of builds off it. And everything that builds off it could be really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But you just feel like the first group, because of the way they're shot and the way they were done and the, you know, and the time in which they came out and the way people grew up with them and passed them on to their kids and stuff like that, that they have, you know, that has its own sort of cultural place that no sequel, no matter how good, is ever going to be able to duplicate from that level. But yes, you're correct. There is obviously a whole universe of stuff they're going to try to create out of this.
Right. And also, I think, Dave, you know, to what you just said about, for example, how the films were shot. Again, you know, I think Disney, at least, or at least J.J. Abrams, realizes that that's an important aspect of Star Wars. And he's, you know, shooting with real sets as opposed to all green screen stuff, which the prequels were all CGI. Well,
yeah, we all know.
You know, J.J. Abrams went out of his way to, you know, do a lot of real live sets for these films because he wanted to recreate, or at least be in the same kind of ballpark as the original movies were.
Right.
And, you know, I that's a good sign, too, that, you know, that he realizes and the producers and even Disney realize that, you know, the original is where, you know, where we have to focus, you know, trying to recreate that. Maybe they won't be able to, but at least that's what they're trying for.
Yeah. And I'm saying these things because I'm a little alarmed by the way in which this is put. But if the films come out and the films really are an extension of the third of the three original films and they pull that off seamlessly, well, then heck, fine. You know, I'm okay with it. If all of those things that Mike's talking about, if the stormtroopers look like the originals and if there's a Darth Vader, if there is, you know, the things that are in the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are in this next group of movies, then okay, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
But if they're going to try to not have Darth Vader in the film, in the park, and instead have whatever the new bad guy is, just because they think people won't know who Vader is, I mean, that's obviously not going to be the case.
Right.
And that's obviously short-sighted. So I see where you're going, Mike, and you're 100% right. I have to reserve judgment on this until the films come out. And man, just that trailer alone made me say to myself, I have to wait a year for this because it looked great.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I would say, Dave, is that, you know, they're never going to get rid of Darth Vader.
They can't.
They're just not. I mean, that's there's also always going to be Star Tours, which is sort of the, you know, the film based upon the original trilogy, kind
right.
of, sort of. I mean, how many more attractions are they going to build? I mean, you're not going to get five new attractions in Disney's Hollywood Studios. Or let me take that back. If you do, two or three of them will be things like a Death Star spinner ride, which, right. you know, really, I mean,
okay.
whether that's based upon the original or not.
It doesn't matter. Right.
There may be one or two like attractions based upon the new trilogy. You still have Star Tours. You'll still have, you know, Darth Vader meet and greets and, you know, Jedi Training Academy and all that kind of stuff. So I'm thinking it'll be probably more of a mix of the two. I can't imagine you'll ever see anything based upon Jar Jar Binks or anything like that, but I think we're only looking at the original trilogy and what's coming. But, you know, and the other thing I would say, Dave, or do you want to say anything about that?
No. I agree. I don't want to sound alarmist. I don't like the way this article is written. It does kind of scare me a little bit. I mean, that's really all I have to say about it. But, you know, and I just hope that, you know, that Iger understands the incorrectness behind what he said, you know, and realizes that if everybody who sees the new movie, even if they love it, walks in and sees nothing but stuff from the original trilogy, there isn't a single person who's going to be upset by that.
Yeah, probably.
Not one, but okay, I understand. Go ahead.
One more thing, Dave, before we go. What did you think about the new lightsaber?
Oh, with the side. Yeah.
That's weird,
did,
right?
That did create a storm of criticism.
It's... Well, the first thing I thought of is it must be very easy to injure yourself with those side kind of.
Right.
I guess they're supposed to mimic. I forget what they call those, like almost a handguard for, you know, a sword, right? Is that what they call them, handguards?
Yeah.
I guess that's what that was.
That's what I think it probably was supposed to be as well.
Kind of looked cool, but I don't know.
It did look cool. It's a year away. You never know what could be taken out. It is simple, probably click of a mouse to get rid of them.
That's
so
true.
You know, so it may not even happen by the time we get to it, and it may be one of those things that everybody goes back to see the original trailer that had the crazy lightsaber in it that never made it to film. That is the one thing in you picked out the one thing that made me go, I hope they're not trying too hard here, you know, because that really was the problem, right, with the three prequels, is they just try too hard to overwhelm you with this feeling of detail
what they thought was cool.
Right. Yeah. And that was the first thing that was the only thing in that trailer that made me say that. The rest of it looked great. Now, Mike, did you see the people who edited the trailer to make it the George Lucas special edition?
Yes, I did.
That was good.
Did you see the Saturday Night Live one?
Yes. It's amazing what a trailer did, you know? It really is amazing. I mean,
it got like 110 million views already or something like that.
Like, people were so disappointed by the prequels.
I know.
You know, and were so let down by it. And to see Disney step up and say, we are going to fix that. And we're going to get it back to what you want. And even getting close to what we would want.
Right.
You know, is what people are just pining away for. It. And that's what I mean about how nobody cares. People love those first three films. It doesn't matter what the next ones do. You know, it'll still be those first three films. Listen, if those three films can solve what Lucas did with the prequels, it can or survive that, they can survive anything.
Yeah,
and still
true.
Be a cultural phenomenon. So that's why I think they should really base it on those three. But that seems like we've been saying over and over, that seems like what they're going to do with these films. So anything else that Iger mentioned in any of these articles that you want to go to before we
off? I mean, he talked about how there's nothing in the works about maybe a new franchise like Star Wars or Marvel.
Right.
And talks a little bit about magic bands, but nothing really.
And the last thing before I let you go then, Mike, is... Yeah. Does the news, just to go back to Avatar, does this, what reading this, excite you at all for it? Or do you still have this kind of, you know, touch of cynicism because of the film?
I still have a touch of cynicism because of the film. I don't feel any different than I did after seeing the original, when the first concept art came out. I guess that was what, last October?
Yeah.
Has it been over a year? No, it couldn't have been.
The first concept art?
Yeah, when they announced that D23 in Tokyo. I guess it's been over a year since they announced that, right?
Since the D23. That mean the video that we were just talking about before? That couldn't have been that long ago.
I think I was in Disney, right? I think I was in Kidani Village. I think it's been over a year.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was October of 2013.
At least when the concept art came out. I felt better about the project at that point in time due to the concept art, you know, some of the scale models that you saw and the fact that they had a boat ride. And so I felt better about the project then. I wasn't as down on it then. Nothing has made me any happier or sadder. I think I'm at a status quo right now. I mean, if I hear in the future that the boat ride's going to be taken out and they're just going to do the, I'll be disappointed by that.
Well, we're going to have another one of, I'm sure we're going to have a few more of these type of shows as opening day for Pandora gets closer and closer.
I'm sure.
Well, thanks once again for tuning into Radio Harambe. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes and leave us a review there. Be nice. Those reviews really do help get the word out on the show. Don't forget to check our website, jomboeveryone.com. There you'll find everything you need to know about the animal kingdom. Also, check out our store, as I mentioned before. Go to jomboeveryone.com, and you'll see the store link there. Also, feel free to follow us on Twitter. I'm at Radio Harambe. Mike is at jomboeveryone. Mike's also on Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube. I'm on Facebook, so you can find us all there at the website as well. I guess that's it. So, for Safari Mike, I'm Dave McBride. Kwaharini, go well, and thank you for listening to Radio Harambe. Na kungungu, na utukuku, ata melele, amina. Kwaku walufwa melako, na kungungu, na utukuku, ata melele, amina. Kwaku walufwa melako, na kungungu, na utukuku.